This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at numberfire.com, and this is episode 4 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. For those of you who saw it on Twitter, I'm going to be doing a mailbag episode each Friday. Hopefully each Friday forever. I mean, as long as this podcast exists. I'll do them each week as long as I'm around that week. Maybe I'll be on vacation or something. I hope that I get to go on a vacation at some point. So if you have a question that you want answered, you can either tweet at me at LateRoundQB or you can email me at jj@numberfire.com. It could be about anything. It could be about football. I think a lot of them are going to be about football. It can be about life. But hopefully I will give you strong enough answers that you want to listen to these podcasts each Friday when they drop. And as a reminder, before I get to answering this week's questions, remember to subscribe to this podcast by searching NumberFire NFL Podcasts on iTunes. We've got other shows within the NumberFire Podcast Network as well. And if you want to subscribe to them, just simply search for NumberFire in iTunes and they'll pop up. We do have a DFS feed where Jim Sonnes is doing his Solo Shot podcast. And Jim Sonnes and Brandon Gadula are doing their Heat Check podcast, which is a great listen. They do that a few times a week. All right, let's get to some questions. This first one is from Eric from San Diego. He asked, will these be daily during the season to not focus on DFS, but instead year-long fantasy? So I figured I'd start out with an administrative question. But yes, the goal with this show is to be more season-long focused. I may just slip in a comment or two during the season about DFS players when answering questions or when talking about players, but this is solely focused on season-long fantasy football or football in general. We do have, as I mentioned, even more, we'll have more podcasts focused on DFS that you can look at and subscribe to on iTunes when you search for the NumberFire DFS podcast. But as it stands, this show is season-long focused. Okay, now that all that's out of the way, I feel like that was all administrative. It's not really what I love to do, but I have to do it. This is the kind of stuff that I love talking about. This question from Stephen K. He says, who are two running backs and wide receivers that finished outside the top 20 at their respective positions that could find themselves jump into the top 20 in fantasy football this year? I love this question. I love these types of questions. I went with PPR. I was looking at PPR scoring in this case. For wide receivers specifically, I think it's really easy to say DeAndre Hopkins or Allen Robinson or Dez Bryant or AJ Green, guys who really underperformed with the first two or guys who are hurt in the last two. But that's not fun. I'm not going to do that. You guys didn't open this podcast and start listening for me to tell you that Allen Robinson is going to be better than he was last year. DeAndre Hopkins is going to be better than he was last year. Or AJ Green is going to be better than he was last year. That's not why you're listening to this show. I need to be better than that. So the first wide receiver that I think could finish in the top 20 that wasn't in the top 20 last year is DeSean Jackson. I've written about DeSean Jackson this offseason. I'm obsessed with the signing. I think that it was perfect for Tampa Bay. Because what does DeSean Jackson do well? He gets downfield and he can make these splash plays. Over the last 5 years, he's averaged 11.51 air yards per catch with a 5.91 yards after the catch rate. So if you combine those two, that's basically the amount of yards that he's gaining per catch. A wideout, though, with that type of air yards per catch rate, if you look at historic wide receivers and the way that they've performed when they see that kind of air yards per catch, they would be expected to have about a 3.85 yards after the catch per catch average. In other words, DeSean Jackson is a monster at creating yards after the catch. Meanwhile, Jameis Winston, his new quarterback, threw the ball 16 or more yards down the field on 21.69% of his passes in 2016. And that was the third most in the entire NFL. And as a result of that, over 66% of Winston's yards accumulated came through the air. What that tells us is that they didn't have many playmakers that could do things after the catch. Mike Evans was really bad after the catch this past year. It's not because Mike Evans is bad at creating yards after the catch. I think a lot of it is sort of like what we saw out of DeAndre Hopkins in 2015. And I actually wrote an article about this. DeAndre Hopkins 2015 is a lot like Mike Evans 2016 in that they were force-fed the ball. They had really, really low yards after the catch profiles. And I think it's because they were force-fed the ball so much. You know, if you're being double teamed all the time, or if you're catching these jump balls, you're not in a position to get these the high yards after the catch numbers. That's why I think DeSean Jackson is such a good fit. Jameis Winston was getting too many yards via the air, and DeSean Jackson is a monster not only at catching those types of passes, but making plays after he catches those passes. That's something that they did not have in Tampa Bay this year. Now, the bottom line is that fantasy football is a volume-driven game, so we need to see and make sure that DeSean Jackson is going to be able to see volume. Well, Mike Evans had a near 30% target market share this past year, meaning he saw almost 30% of the team's targets, which was the highest in the NFL, a really high number in general. I think that can be knocked down a bit. They also lost some volume when Russell Shepard left. There's not that much competition in general in Tampa Bay. I think the fear from a volume perspective with Tampa Bay is that we saw a slight flip towards the second half of last season when their defense started playing better and the team was just better. They became a little bit more conservative in terms of running the ball more than they did the first half of the season. And the reason for that is just game script related. So if Tampa Bay is better this year, which could happen easily, if they are better, then the volume, the passing volume might not be there, which would be a knock on DeSean Jackson. But even still, overall, if he sees an 18%, 19% target market share, which I think is very, very viable, I think there's a chance that DeSean Jackson finishes in the top 20. Now for the second one, I wish that I could say Terrell Pryor, but he finished as wide receiver 19 last year in PPR format. So instead, I'll go and talk about his teammate, and that's Jamison Crowder. So I already mentioned DeSean Jackson going to Tampa Bay. Pierre Garçon left Washington as well. That freed up over 35% of Washington's targets with their departure. And Crowder himself already saw 99 targets this past year. The competition for Crowder for targets at wide receiver is Josh Doctson and Brian Quick, along with Terrell Pryor, who I already mentioned. And all three of those guys have question marks. I love Terrell Pryor. I think Terrell Pryor is going to be a beast this year. I think he has top 10 upside this year. But again, there's still question marks surrounding what he is as a wide receiver in the NFL. So volume shouldn't be a huge issue for Crowder. The problem is that he's a slot guy. And generally speaking, slot guys do need more volume to kind of combat what you generally see from a yards per target standpoint out of slot receivers. You know, a guy like Terrell Pryor in this offense is going to see a larger yards per target rate than what Jamison Crowder is going to see. So we need more volume for Jamison Crowder to kind of combat the kind of role that he plays in this Washington offense. And now people might be thinking to themselves too, well, he was better than DeSean Jackson last year in PPR leagues despite a lower air yards per catch rate, despite the fact that he didn't see as much volume as DeSean Jackson. Well, this is the other thing that I'm a little fearful with Jamison Crowder, is that there is some touchdown regression potentially coming. Last season, he scored 7 times on just 99 targets, and according to his net expected points profile, he should have scored closer to 5 touchdowns. So there is some potential regression coming in that column. That's a reason to not necessarily love him or absolutely love him from a fantasy standpoint this year. But I do think that he's a strong candidate to jump into the top 20 because, again, the competition isn't immensely strong right now. I know Jordan Reed's there as well. I'm just saying, if he saw 99 targets this past year, I can easily see him eclipsing 100, 110, maybe 120 targets for Washington in 2017. And if that's the case, if he does kind of stay stagnant with his touchdown totals, he will be a top 20 wide receiver. Now, with running backs, here's the thing with running backs. It's a dumpster fire of a position. Like, it's really hard to find guys who will break out this year because everything at the running back position is so opportunity-driven, and opportunity comes from coaching decisions and injuries. Now, here's the thing with the running backs. It's kind of a dumpster fire of a position. It's really hard to find guys at this point in the offseason that are going to break out this next season because everything is so opportunity-driven, and opportunity itself comes from coaching decisions and sometimes injuries. I get talent can drive opportunity, but at the running back position, talent does not matter as much as the wide receiver position. we need depth charts to kind of be straightened out to really be able to find these true breakout guys. And not only that, the draft is upcoming, and we know that running backs can make year one impacts pretty easily. And this draft class has some good running backs. I did mention on Twitter, this is an aside, I did mention on Twitter yesterday that I don't see as many rookie running backs having a year one impact as some other people do in fantasy football. I think that this class is fine. I think it might be a little bit overrated, but I don't see them having as big of a year one impact only because I see the running back landscape right now. And we talked about it a bit with Evan Silva on the first episode of the Late Round Podcast, but I look at the running back landscape and I think it's kind of saturated. I don't see many very, you know, completely open opportunities for running backs. Maybe Green Bay, maybe Oakland, maybe Washington. But you're also having to need a running back to fall into those places that's not only good, but a running back that this team at least pseudo-invested in some way. So I think that, you know, we'll have obviously a clearer picture once the draft is over. But I don't love the opportunity that's out there for running backs right now in general. Maybe I shouldn't say I don't love it. I just don't love it as much as other people might. But to answer your question, I'll just throw three guys out there who finished outside the top 20, who I think could be in the top 20 this year. Ty Montgomery's one. We got to see again what happens during the draft, but I like his PPR upside, especially CJ Anderson. Obviously his injury derailed him last season. And I think Kenneth Dixon has upside once he's back from his suspension. On to the next question. This is from Josh Ersley. He says, Isaiah Crowell as a decent speculative RB2 you can pick up in round 9. So I don't know what league you're going to play in where Isaiah Crowell is a 9th rounder. Right now, he has an ADP that's in the late 4th, early 5th, mid 4th even. But I'll break down Crowell just to kind of let you know where I stand with him. I generally like to associate my running backs with strong quarterback play, and that's obviously not something that the Browns have or will have in 2017, more than likely. I wrote an article on this a couple of years ago on Number Fire, but generally speaking, there's a decent correlation between offenses that are good and running backs who are then strong in fantasy football. That shouldn't be surprising. You know, you have a good quarterback, they move the ball down the field, you have more scoring opportunities, scoring drives fantasy football. I will say this, though, about Crowell specifically. Last year, he was 12th in carries inside the 5-yard line, and he scored 5 times. He ended up with 7 touchdowns last year, and according to Mike Clay's opportunity touchdown metric, OTD, which factors in where a player is getting his opportunity and finds how many scores he should have, Crowell should have had 6.9 touchdowns this past year, nice, which is directly on point to what he did last year. So basically, no regression should be coming when it comes to Isaiah Crowell, which is a really good sign because he's not in a great offense. So I think that with the improved offensive line, depending on what they do in the draft, I think Crowell can easily be an RB2 this year. I think that he has, you know, he should be ranked between maybe RB14 and RB18. Next one is from Scott Cumming. He said, do you think we will see the unprecedented relevant rookie tight end this year? So it's a good question because there's a few strong tight ends coming into the league, whether it's David Njoku, Evan Ingram, OJ Howard. But the bottom line to this answer is that we need to know where they land. We do. I mean, everything is so opportunity driven that it's tough to give you a concrete answer with these tight ends. We know that tight ends do not perform well as rookies. Hunter Henry was almost an outlier last season the way that he performed. So I'm personally not super into these guys from a redraft perspective year one. And some of that has to do with the fact that I don't mind some of the later round tight ends right now either, whether you're looking at Martellus Bennett and his new role in Green Bay. I like Jack Doyle a lot, despite the fact that he runs like a dad. I like him a lot in Indianapolis, just the way that they've used their tight ends and the opportunity that's going to come his way. I think Ladarius Green has a lot of upside again. I know people were rolling their eyes listening to that, but Ladarius Green was very, very good with Pittsburgh this past year when he did play. So, you know, I think that the list is fairly strong with upside guys, and those three rookies, you know, dependent or even independent of where they land, are kind of in that same upside bucket, but they don't have the experience. So therefore, I'm probably not going to own many of them in redraft. Now, Dynasty is obviously a different situation. I think that some of those rookies are easily, you know, an OJ Howard, for instance, is a first round rookie pick. But when it comes to redraft, I'm mostly going to be staying away. This next one is from Tom McGovern. He says, who are your late round QB targets in MFL 10s right now based on ADP? So for those of you who don't know what MFL 10s even are, they're leagues that are by myfantasyleague.com where you draft a team of 20 players, fill out your roster as you would otherwise, but instead of fixing your lineup each week, it's being optimized based on how those players perform. So basically, it's taking the best scores from your players after the fact, and it's creating a lineup for you. So you have to have high upside guys. You have to balance it. There's a lot of strategy to it. You have to balance it with guys who have high floors. You have to know what ideal roster construction looks like. If you want to roster 2 quarterbacks, 3 quarterbacks, if you want to roster 5 running backs, 6 running backs, 7 running backs, there's a lot of data out there and a lot of guys who do awesome, awesome work with MFL 10 roster construction strategy that's out there that you can find if you just do a quick search on Twitter. So for me personally, I found that 2 quarterback teams are optimal, and I generally will scatter shares among quarterbacks because the position itself isn't that worthwhile enough to go all in on one guy. What I mean by that is the edge that you get from the quarterback position isn't nearly as great as the edge that you will get from a potential high-end running back or a high-end wide receiver. And generally speaking, it's hard to pinpoint quarterbacks late that will give you a significant edge in general. You know, the quarterbacks that do give you an edge are drafted early. There's no doubt. I will not deny that. The problem is that we assume that every quarterback drafted early will give you that edge, and that's just not the case. It's not. 1 or 2 quarterbacks per season are giving you a big edge in fantasy football. Pinpointing those guys is a lot easier said than done. I think people think that it's very, very easy because it's Aaron Rodgers every year. It's Andrew Luck every year. It's not how it works. It's not. Now, I will have favorites that I draft a lot. And, you know, I'm gonna pat myself on the back a little bit. But one of my favorites last year, aside from Tony Romo, one of my favorites last year was Matt Ryan. And the reason for that is I'm a very, very big proponent in touchdown rate being a very big indicator for future quarterback success and the way that we analyze touchdown rate. The reason I like Matt Ryan this past year is because in 2015, his touchdown rate, which is just touchdowns divided by attempts, his touchdown rate was very, very low compared to not only his career average, but the average among NFL quarterbacks since 2011. He had, I think, a 3.4% touchdown rate 2 years ago. His career average was closer to 4.5%, which is about the league average in the NFL. I'm not saying that I projected him to have a high touchdown rate and be the MVP of the league because he elevated his play. But at the same time, it's one way of looking at potential guys that are going to break out in some way, shape, or form. You can look at things on the flip side too with Cam Newton, where in 2015 he had a 7.1% touchdown rate, and that just completely regressed this past year to below his career average. It's just, it's what happens with this statistic. So basically, looking at touchdown rates and the fluctuation of touchdown rates is a really good way, a quick way even, to see which quarterbacks could have up years after having a down year. And one guy that really fits the bill that this season is Andy Dalton. Russell Wilson is one that works as well, but his ADP hasn't really changed. He's QB5 in MFL 10s right now. But Andy Dalton is coming off a season where he had a 3.2% touchdown rate, which is far, far lower than the approximate 4.5% average that we've seen over the last 5 or 6 years. His average since 2011 actually is 4.64%, which is better than the league average. And let's not forget, we're not that far removed from when Andy Dalton had a really, really good borderline MVP season for Cincinnati before, I think it was his finger that he broke in 2015 when AJ McCarron came in. He had a 6.5% touchdown rate that year. He threw 25 touchdowns in just 13 games. So it's not like Andy Dalton's never done this before. So with a healthy AJ Green, another year for Tyler Boyd, and it sounds like they may even invest in a running back in the draft, which I don't fully back, but I can understand it. The offensive line did take a hit this year, but I think that overall things are looking pretty decent for Andy Dalton, who's basically free in MFL 10s right now. The next one's from Twitter. It's from @CheeseBladeAU. They say, have you identified any reliable metrics that predict running back or wide receiver consistency from year to year? Yeah, so I wrote an article this week on NumberFire that's called "We Should Stop Using Per Target Numbers to Predict Future Fantasy Football Success," which I'm assuming where this question is stemming from. But what I found is basically the R-squared value or the correlation from 1 year to the next, the stickiness from 1 year to the next with non-volume metrics is not very strong. It's actually almost non-existent. So a guy who has a high yards per target rate 1 year, we should not assume that he's going to have a high yards per target rate the next year. But what we can do is say, if this guy had a lot of volume this year, he's probably going to see a lot of volume next year. And that's the reason that I love using and utilizing our net expected points metric, is because net expected points, net, the word net, it's a volume-driven metric. And it's telling us what's actually happening on a football field instead of things being sort of skewed by fantasy scoring. Anytime we look at things like fantasy points per target, we're skewing things so dramatically, it's unreal. Not only are fantasy points messed up because we weigh things arbitrarily. A touchdown's worth 6 points. Why? A touchdown or a point is for every 10 yards. Why? It's just random. It's arbitrary. We don't count first downs or what happens on a 3rd and 7 when a guy converts a first down. Net expected points captures all of that. It tells us what's actually happening on a football field. And I think that a problem in the fantasy football world and with readers is that we never ask the question why. And it starts with the analysts, don't get me wrong, and I'm guilty of it as well, but we assume that the data that we're giving folks is worthwhile data to look at. I think most data is worthwhile. It just depends on how much you weigh that data or how much you say that this data is important or not important. But with regards to the study that I did, I just looked at targets year over year, market share year over year, catch rate year over year, and so on. And basically, there's a 0.01 R squared value between fantasy points per target from 1 year to the next year among wide receivers. There's basically none. But with targets, it's 0.53. So decent correlation for targets 1 year to the next, which isn't that surprising. Good players get targets. They get volume. The stickiness is that you want to be able to project volume when you're looking at year over year fantasy success, because that's what actually drives the game. But to be honest, volume can be a somewhat subjective thing to look at. It's not like we have these formulas that are going to tell us how a coach is going to use a player or when a player is going to be on a field or when an injury is going to happen. So it's very, this is the hardest part of fantasy football. If you can solve the volume game and projecting the volume game, and by projecting the volume game, I'm not talking about looking at what happened this past year and regressing something back to a mean. I'm saying that finding exactly how many carries a guy is going to have is a very, very difficult endeavor, but it's the most important thing in fantasy football. Volume drives everything. But this question actually matches and aligns really well with the next question, so I'm going to leave it at that and then talk about this next question. Hopefully it all comes together. The next question is from Mark Leader. He says, which statistics are the strongest indicators of regression, and who are some regression/progression candidates that you have for 2017? I already talked through that volume is everything. That's the stickiness point in fantasy football. But one of the biggest things that you can analyze in fantasy football, one of the most important things you can analyze in fantasy football, since volume can be subjective, is regression analysis. You know, a lot of times fantasy players and analysts just look at what happened the previous season and assume that the thing that happened the previous year is going to happen the next year. And it might for volume. I just talked about that. But there are other factors that definitely don't happen the next year. I mentioned Cam Newton already. I think that he's a great example. I had a hot take, or people considered a hot take, when I said that Cam Newton wasn't the top quarterback last year at fantasy football. And it's because of regression. The bottom line is, it's not me trashing Cam Newton. It's that when you're an MVP of the league, that means that you're putting together an outlier season in some way, shape, or form. And when you have an outlier season, that means it's going to be very, very difficult to duplicate. Cam Newton had a really, really high touchdown rate 2 years ago when he won MVP. It was going to be very hard for him to do that again. He regressed to the mean. Another good example, Calvin Johnson in 2012. He had 5 touchdowns despite having 1,964 yards. He had 122 catches and only 5 of them were touchdowns. You remember, I think that was the year where he just fell on the 1 yard line every other play. Like, he was purposely falling on the 1 yard line, it felt like, especially if you were a Calvin Johnson owner. But it was an anomaly. He had 16 the previous season, and then he had 12 the next season. So there's sort of this boomerang effect with touchdowns, and it goes back to the touchdown rate thing that I was talking about. So I'm going to circle back then to the previous question and tie it to this one. Fantasy football is about volume. That's what the previous question was about. That's the stickiness year to year. It's about volume, and it's about touchdown. When you solve volume or have a way of going about looking at volume somewhat objectively, you can then look at touchdowns and how they fluctuate year over year, because that's really what drives fantasy football. That's why I mentioned Mike Clay's OTD metric. I mean, Mike Clay is a very, very smart fantasy analyst. He understands that touchdowns matter. But that's also why I do regression analysis on our expected points metric. So again, net expected points shows us what's actually happening on a football field. It's attributing the gain in expected points or the loss in expected points to a particular player. And it's adding all those instances together to get a net expected points metric. That's why the word net is there. It's a sum. I look at our net expected points metric and compare it to how many touchdowns a player actually scored. So if you look at wide receivers and compare them and their net expected points scores to the amount of touchdowns they scored, you can regress and show a guy who overperformed or underperformed within the touchdown statistic. So this past year, both Green Bay wide receivers topped the list in terms of scored more than they should have. Now, I should put a disclaimer. This is the way that it goes for any algorithm or formula or anything that has a blanket way of looking at the NFL. Any of them. You can't take them exactly for what they're worth. You can't look at this equation that I'm talking about and assume that the guy throwing the ball to Devontae Adams is the same guy that's throwing the ball to Terrell Pryor. Because that wasn't the case this past year. Aaron Rodgers is a lot different than Cody Kessler. So you have to take all of this with a grain of salt, but it at least gives us this initial view at guys who overperformed and underperformed within the touchdown metric. So like I said, both Green Bay, Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams, topped the list in guys who scored more than they should have this year. Dante Moncrief had 7 touchdowns. According to our expected points model, when you regress it, he should have had closer to 3 based on his expected points profile. Anquan Boldin, another guy who should score fewer this year. Tyreek Hill. And then one guy that definitely should is Sterling Shepard. And then on the other end, the opposite end, which I think is what people are more interested in generally, Pierre Garçon only had 3 touchdowns this past year when he should have had closer to 7. T.Y. Hilton had just 6 when he should have had closer to 9.5 or 10. Julian Edelman's actually another great example. In 2015, Julian Edelman had 7 touchdowns in his 9 games that he played. Like, he was not doing normal things on the football field. Julian Edelman should not be scoring 7 touchdowns in 9 games, given the role that he plays in that offense. But then this past year, he had just 3 touchdowns on 159 targets. It's just a really good example of this boomerang effect that I'm talking about. You regress, and then you progress, and then you overcorrect. Mike Evans this past year, great example. He had just a couple touchdowns two years ago. Then this past year, he blows up. It's just what happens. But you have to take each of these kind of case by case. You know, we can look at a list of guys who should have had more touchdowns. But if you say, oh, Jordy Nelson should have had fewer touchdowns, well, obviously, maybe not as few as another player in his position because Jordy Nelson has Aaron Rodgers throwing him the ball. But that's the initial look that you should go with and approach with fantasy football, in my opinion, at least. The bottom line is you first figure out volume. And how you figure out volume is you look at team tendencies and how you project them to throw the ball in terms of volume, and then you break it down by market share for these individual players. Market share being the percentage of targets that you expect a player to get in an offense. And there's ways to figure that out. And then from there, you can look and see what a guy did the previous year in terms of scoring. And unless they're freak athletes, you know, like Dez Bryant is always going to score a lot of touchdowns. But unless they're freak athletes, you can regress that number. It's a lot easier, again, if they're playing in an average offense and they are an average wide receiver. It's a lot easier to do things that way. I think a good example, again, is Pierre Garçon. where he scored just 3 touchdowns this past year, but he should have had closer to 7. And Pierre Garçon is, he's a good wide receiver. I'm not calling him average, but he's not a guy who's going to light things up from a touchdown standpoint or not light things up from a touchdown standpoint. Jordy Nelson, you have to adjust a bit because he's getting passes from Aaron Rodgers. So again, with touchdowns, you can regress them. With volume, you got to figure that out because that's what's stickiest year over year. Last question. It's a fun one from Justin Rao. He says, you're on an airplane. You want to recline your seat. Do you ask the person behind you or do you just do it? So here's the thing, Justin. I'm not very confrontational. You might see me on Twitter, like, ask someone a question and say, why do you feel this way about a player? But I'm really not a confrontational person, especially IRL. So I probably would not ask the person behind me before just doing it. Because here's the thing. If I just let my seat go and it crushes this dude behind me who's 6'7" and has his knees just being pushed into the seat in front of him. I'm 6'1" and I even get my knees pushed into the seat in front of me. The guy is not going to say anything to me because I'm not doing anything wrong by reclining my seat. So confrontation avoided. I'm never going to see that guy again in my life. So whatever. I'm just going to do it. That's it for the questions this week, guys. Again, I appreciate you tuning in. As a reminder, you can subscribe to this show on iTunes by searching NumberFire NFL Podcast, and you can find all other NumberFire shows by simply searching for NumberFire in iTunes. Thanks, guys.